Behind the Arc, a look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc, hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in-depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc, here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for checking out Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. And we have Tennessee basketball to talk about after five games were canceled. Tennessee finally got on the basketball court on Tuesday night in a 56-47 win over Colorado. And for Tennessee, finally getting to get its season underway, I think it was great to have them back out on the court. They've got Cincinnati coming up on Saturday. And for Tennessee, overall, good defensive performance. Offensively, some things to work on, but a lot of energy from Tennessee. You could tell they really wanted to be out there on the floor. I think at times Rick Barnes was frustrated with how his team was playing, which is nice to know that in 2020, at least some things never change. But Tennessee, solid defensively, offensively, got into a couple of droughts there in the second half. Colorado started to make some moves, and Tennessee was able to hold off the Buffaloes and never give up the lead, and then pulled away late, and Tennessee ultimately was able to control the flow of the game. So overall, good start to the season for Tennessee. I like what I saw early. Tennessee jumped out to that big lead after forcing a bunch of turnovers from Colorado and turning those into quick buckets. And for Tennessee, what they were able to do defensively, forcing Colorado into bad shots, not letting Colorado get into much of a rhythm, and then Colorado kind of gave it right back to Tennessee, switching to that 2-3 zone, forcing a lot of takeaways. Tennessee got a little bit sloppy on offense at times. Outside of the turnovers, I think the game plan went about as you would expect for Tennessee, the difference being the execution. Obviously, Tennessee only shooting 35% from the floor, 36% from three, going 7 of 19 from behind the arc, which, if you remember last year, that's the range of three-pointers Rick Barnes wants his team to take. He doesn't like shooting more than 23s. He's okay with that 16 to 20 mark. So Tennessee goes 7 of 19 from three, shooting nearly 37% from three. Eve Pons, 10 rebounds, no blocks. So a long streak that dated back to his sophomore season of at least one block in every game for Tennessee comes to a close. Tennessee actually with just one block as a team. That came from EJ Anasicki, and a lot of minutes for him off the bench as well as Keon Johnson. Jaden Springer scored 6 points in just 9 minutes coming off the bench. And it ended up being Victor Bailey Jr. that got the start in the backcourt along with Santiago Vescovi and Josiah Jordan-James. I thought that was really interesting. Bailey found his shot early and finished with 8 points off 7 shots. But I think for Tennessee, you see the blend of experience and youthful talent along with the incoming transfers. And so Bailey Jr. was not somebody that was being discussed as a starter. I think the thought was, okay, Vescovi, James will be on the floor. Fulkerson and Pons will obviously be the front court. And then probably Keon Johnson or Jaden Springer as that fifth guy. One of the two five-star freshmen will likely make an appearance. And instead, it's Victor Bailey Jr., and he goes out and he gets 8 points pretty quickly and ends up having overall a pretty nice Tennessee debut, adding a pair of assists, 3 rebounds, and 3 steals. So really good defensively. Vescovi with 5 assists and a pair of steals and 11 points, tied for the team lead in scoring, and Fulkerson 11 points in just 23 minutes, but not the most efficient night for him, just 4 of 10 from the field. Eve Pons, 1 of 9 from the floor, finishing with 2 points, but 10 rebounds, so impacting the game in other ways. I think Tennessee, just like any other top team, to a degree, is going to get off to a slow start when you're having to change up your lineup a little bit, and it is different. It's the first season opener for Santiago Vescovi. Josiah Jordan-James is healthy, and I thought James looked much more free from an athletic standpoint. He just seemed more comfortable on the floor, didn't seem like anything was holding him back, like that hip injury he was having to deal with through most of last season. If you recall, he missed the preseason last year from not being totally healthy. That doesn't seem like the case this year. I know Tennessee's dealt with some COVID issues. Rick Barnes tested positive at one point. They didn't get back into the gym until last Friday. I thought Josiah Jordan-James just looked much more comfortable on the floor, had 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 3 steals. Tennessee with 12 steals as a team, again, forcing a lot of mistakes from Colorado's offense. The Buffaloes with 23 turnovers on the night. Tennessee with 16 points off of those turnovers. And McKinley Wright, the fourth, 40 minutes, but just 3 of 8 from the field. 7 assists, or 7 rebounds, 4 assists, but just 8 points. And not getting to the line as much as you would normally see him try to force his way there. Colorado having some issues offensively after being a really good team in terms of scoring from their first 2 games. And I know that those were against South Dakota and Kansas State, but still a team that knew how to score points. Jariah Horn came off the bench and led Colorado with 15 points with a game high. Also had 11 rebounds. He was the only one to reach double figures for the Buffaloes. And Tennessee overall did a nice job at shutting down what Colorado was trying to do offensively. Only 12 foul shots for Colorado, 33% from the field, 22% from 3. Lost the rebounding battle, but didn't allow Colorado to have a ton of ball movement. Tennessee, again, 15 turnovers. That's probably too high of a number than what Rick Barnes would like to see. But when you still win the turnover battle by 8, I think overall you're going to like what you see from Tennessee's defense. And that is going to be the focal point of this team. It's going to be a defensive team, one of the better defensive teams in college basketball, especially with the reigning defensive player of the year, Eve Pons. And you take into account EJ Anasicki's presence in the front court, Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer, those guys trying to develop more defensively. They talked in the preseason that they understand you want to get on the floor, you prove yourself on defense, especially when you're being coached by Rick Barnes. So I think for Tennessee, and you have to replace a really good on-ball defender with Lamonte Turner. So understanding that role has to be filled in the backcourt, I thought Tennessee did a nice job of that because McKinley Wright, the fourth, was having a pretty nice season from an offensive standpoint, was averaging 22 points a game going into last night, and Tennessee held him to single digits. And if you're Tennessee, that's the start you were hoping for, especially when you look around the country and you see teams like Kansas and Duke and Kentucky all getting off to fairly slow starts. Villanova has not looked sharp through the most part of the season. Got a really nice win over Texas on Sunday, but nearly lost to Boston College, dropped that game to Virginia Tech. So you've seen some top teams just be a little slow out of the gate. And the fact that Tennessee was able to pick up a win against a power conference opponent for a game that was just scheduled a couple days before tip-off, that's a nice way to start the season. Of course, it doesn't have the same, pow factor as playing against Gonzaga, but you beat a Colorado team that was likely going to the NCAA tournament last year, had a pair of all Pac-12 selections, including an all first team selection, and McKinley Wright the fourth, who was also on the all defensive team. So for Tennessee, defensive game, scrappy game, got ugly after Tennessee jumped out to that big lead early, but the Vols pulled away, never trailed. Really have to like what the Vols did, especially on defense. For Santiago Vescovi, I think he's doing a better job at being able to handle the basketball. I do think he becomes a little bit too one-dimensional. Had 11 points, 5 assists, 2 steals, just 3 turnovers, which that's something that he has needed to cut down on, and he did, especially playing 33 minutes of basketball to have just 3 turnovers. Remember, played 31 minutes and had 9 turnovers in his debut last season against LSU. Was 3-for-4 from 3-point range, 3-for-5 from the floor. So an efficient day. What I mean by one-dimensional is when he drives, very rarely does he actually go to the rim. He likes to drive and kick, likes to dish back out. And that's fine, and he's a good passer, and it's great that he can do that. The thing is, at some point, he's going to have to try to go to the rim. And really, he went 0-for-1 from inside the arc, and then the only other time that he attempted to put up a shot, he was called for a charge. And when he leaves his feet and does that, he's more likely to draw a charge because defenders know that it's coming. He's going to try to leave his feet and then kick out to the corner, kick out to the perimeter. And Rick Barnes talked about that last year. He said, you can get away with that a little bit playing Euro ball, but eventually you can't just leave your feet and kick out every time, or they're going to call you for a charge. And that happened last night. So that's something that Vescovi still needs to work on. Fulkerson, hit a mid-range jumper early, and I thought that he was going to have a really nice performance offensively. But just 4 of 10 from the field, 11 points on the day, but I think you're going to see more from Fulkerson moving forward. I think the best is yet to come for him this season. And obviously, we're all aware of just how good Fulkerson can be with what he did at Rupp Arena last year, what he did against Florida. Saw him attempt a three-pointer, so it didn't take deep into the SEC season to see him do that, and he kind of airmailed it, but so that's not great. But overall, you take the performance from Fulkerson with 11 points in just 23 minutes, just 3 rebounds. Pons with the bulk of the boards, with 10 boards, and again, not a good offensive performance from him. He hit a nice turnaround mid-range jumper, and that seemed like a shot that was really comfortable for him last year. Struggled with his stroke throughout the rest of the night. Steve Hamer on the broadcast on the SEC Network Plus last night said all of Pons' shots are hitting the front of the rim. And so just needing to find that comfort zone in game situations again, and Tennessee will have an opportunity to do that against Cincinnati this weekend. EJ Anasicki, I was impressed. I was surprised that he got on the floor as much as he did. 14 minutes, just 1 of 6 from the floor, but 4 rebounds, all on the offensive glass. And man, does he have a lot of strength. That's a good Colorado team with a lot of length that's going to compete in the Pac-12 this year. But Anasicki, a great job of boxing out, was able to get a nice putback after grabbing an offensive board, and he just cleared out the paint and was able to and made it look easy. And you're not supposed to make offensive rebounds look easy, and at times, EJ Anasicki did last night. Josiah Jordan-James had a really nice putback that led to an and-one. The energy was there. We talked to Ron Slay yesterday on Sports 180 during the Slay ride, and he said, you know, when there is a lack of crowd in the arena, whether you're at home at a neutral court game or you're on the road, how do you get energy? Well, you need a Ron Slay. You need somebody to bring that energy. You have to feed it off of yourselves and off of your teammates. Tennessee did that last night, especially after it looked like they kind of fell asleep, got caught flat-footed a few times. Colorado started to get going in transition, which is what they like to do because of how good of a defensive team they are. McKinley Wright Jr. and Tyler Bay were both on the all-defensive team in the Pac-12 last year. Bay, of course, is gone, but McKinley Wright is still there as a leader of that team. And so when they started to get going in transition, you wondered, okay, what's going to happen if Colorado takes the lead? How much more does the momentum swing if Colorado responds to that huge deficit with a big run? And it never got to that point. Tennessee woke up, started making some plays, started battling inside, and when Josiah Jordan-James ends up hitting that and one, he and Anasicki are fired up. The team had a lot of energy, and Colorado never really got that close again as it was when it drew within one. So I thought Tennessee overall needs to execute offensively, needs to cut down on the turnovers. You'd like to see more assists. Overall, good ball movement, just that assist number you typically want to see it higher for a Rick Barnes coach team. But what Tennessee was able to do defensively, you're talking about a power conference team with some high-scoring players, several guys that are capable of scoring in double figures, and instead, the only guy scoring in double figures comes off the bench. You don't lose the rebounding battle by that much. You really limit what an opposing team can do from the perimeter, and you fend off a big second half run, and it leads to a win. You gave up 47 points to a power conference team. I thought that was really impressive from Tennessee. So all in all, the Vols beat Colorado 56-47. Tennessee will next take on Cincinnati on Saturday at 12:30. That game will also be on the SEC Network Plus. So Tennessee had 5 games canceled, didn't get to play Gonzaga in the Jimmy V Classic last week, didn't get to play Notre Dame, but finally got that season opener, this one against a power conference opponent. So credit to Kim English for his work. He had some connections to that Colorado staff. And of course, Colorado's head coach Tad Boyle is a former Tennessee assistant from the late 90s when Jerry Green was the head coach in Knoxville. But credit to both teams for being able to put that game together. And that's something that I think a lot of schools have done in multiple sports for scheduling games in the midst of this pandemic when games have been canceled. Teams want to play, and the schools have done their part to make sure that teams play. So really impressive from Tennessee last night from the defensive front. Cincinnati coming off that loss to Xavier earlier last weekend will have an opportunity to take on a team that beat them last year. And Cincinnati 1-1 on the season, beat Lipscomb last Wednesday, lost Xavier in the crosstown shootout on Saturday. They actually play Furman, which is off to a 4-0 start Wednesday night at 5 o'clock. And that Furman team, if you remember, was competing in the SoCon with ETSU and UNC Greensboro, as those three teams were all vying for who was going to get the automatic bid. It was really going to be a one bid league, but that was a good Furman team last year, off to a 4-0 start this season. See what Cincinnati can do as you get to check them out Wednesday night at 5 o'clock before Tennessee and Cincy tip off on Saturday. Cincinnati winning that matchup a year ago. Tennessee having an opportunity to make that right on this end. We'll come back. We'll look around at a major Tuesday in college basketball. Iowa, North Carolina in action, Kansas in action, Duke in action, Illinois going to Cameron Indoor. We'll talk about all that next on the Behind the Arc podcast. I appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Big Tuesday in college basketball, with the Big East, Big 12 battle happening, the ACC Big 10 challenge is in motion. A lot of great basketball last night in just top 25 teams alone. We'll start with what happened early in the afternoon. Kansas taking on Creighton, a Kansas team that has not looked entirely elite so far this season. They did beat Kentucky in the State Farm Champions Classic. Kentucky has not gone off to a good start at all. Kansas, of course, had that loss to Gonzaga. Just defensively, you wondered what they were going to be. And instead, they get a monster game with Jalen Wilson. He hits the go-ahead three-pointer in the final minute. Marcus Zagorowski for Creighton misses the final of three foul shots after getting fouled on a game-tying three. And Creighton ends up losing by one to Kansas at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. So Creighton off to a 3-1 start. I think they could be really competitive with Villanova in the Big East. But that's just an unfortunate loss for Creighton, as it looked like they might be able to come away with that one. It was a really competitive game throughout. A lot of flow, both teams going on runs. Kansas jumped out to an 8-point lead with about 11 minutes left in the second half. Creighton battled back and nearly won it at the end. So Kansas is off to a 5-1 start. They've rebounded nicely from that loss to Gonzaga. North Carolina and Iowa jumped out to a huge lead. They were raining down threes in the first half. 11 three-pointers in the first half alone. Finished with 17 on the night, just too shy of their school record. But North Carolina came back in a big way in the second half, made it a game again before Iowa pulled away late. And that came with Luka Garza not having that great of a night. Finished with 16 points, but only had 2 points in the first half. So Garza, 16 points, 14 rebounds. C.J. Frederick with 21 points. Jordan Bohannon with 24. And Joe Wieskamp with 19. So that's starting five with Iowa and all of those guys that are capable of scoring in such a big way. 13 points off the bench. Really impressive showing from Iowa against a UNC team that looks like it is better than what you saw a year ago. And I realize North Carolina's lost a couple games. They lost to Texas, lost to Iowa, two really good basketball teams. But it's a good win at home, especially when North Carolina came back and punched Iowa right in the mouth after the halftime break. Ohio State had to hold off Notre Dame 90-85. Penn State beat the brakes off Virginia Tech. That was a top 15 team that was coming off that win over Villanova last week. And Penn State came out and just obliterated the Hokies. And again, Penn State without its coach, Isaiah Brockington, with a big game, 24 points on 10 of 14 shooting, had 8 rebounds to go with it. And I think for what you're getting out of this Penn State team, last year, they were likely going to be a tournament team. Having to come back, they've already got wins over VCU and Virginia Tech, lost to Seton Hall in overtime on Sunday, but it's a Penn State team that's trying to get back to the tournament for the first time in nearly a decade, and beating a pretty talented Virginia Tech team is a good way to do that in non-conference play. Illinois went to Cameron Indoor and beat Duke by 15, so Duke has lost two top 10 games at Cameron Indoor this season, and for Illinois, with all the talent that they have, they got out to a huge start. Dosunmu scored 18 points. Illinois shot 58% from the floor. And Duke, you kind of wonder, are they taking a step back in terms of being an elite contender? And it's still very early. Matthew Hurt with 19 points, but was 0 of 6 from 3. DJ Stewart with 13 points. Nobody else scored in double figures except Jeremy Roach, who came off the bench to do so. And realistically, just not the performance that you wanted to see from a Coach K team. Just 22% from three. Three-point shooting the last 3 years now has been a serious issue for the Blue Devils. 40% from the field. Illinois, 63% from three-point range. Six guys scored in double figures. Kofi Coburn with 13 points and 8 rebounds. Dosunmu with 12 rebounds and 5 assists to go along with the team high 18 points. A really impressive showing. They out-rebounded Duke. And for a team that had so much length and so much youthful talent, I thought Duke was going to be able to put up more of a fight just because of what happened against Michigan State the week before in the Champions Classic. That's a really nice win for Illinois. And so now you've got the Illini off to a 4-1 start. Their only loss of the year is to Baylor. And they were competitive in that game until the home stretch in the second half. So Illinois and Iowa suddenly looking like the best two teams in the Big Ten. Michigan State already with a big win over Duke as well. So very impressive performance there. And then Rutgers beating Syracuse 79-69. The Scarlet Knights would have gone to the tournament last year, which would have ended the longest power conference tournament drought that is active in the NCAA right now. And Rutgers is off to a 4-0 start after picking up a win over Syracuse. Their first game of this month had not really gotten to test themselves against a quality opponent. Their other wins were against Sacred Heart, Fairleigh Dickinson, and Hofstra. And Syracuse was off to a 3-0 start before that game. Granted, Ryder, Niagara, and Bryant aren't exactly the teams that you're using as a measuring stick, but I think it's impressive the way that Rutgers has gotten off to this start. Illinois has gotten off to a really impressive start. And I think for Iowa, you're seeing some really high-quality basketball teams that could contend to make a Final Four. And these are not the programs that we're used to talking about. For Illinois, it's been a long time. And I think for a lot of these basketball programs that we're not used to talking about, there's a lot of potential there. And it's what's making college basketball a lot of fun right now. We'll update the SEC, some bracketology from ESPN's Joe Lunardi coming up next as we wrap up today's edition of the Behind the Arc podcast. So Tennessee is now one of seven teams in the SEC that are undefeated, that have at least played a game. Ole Miss is supposed to get its season started against UNC Wilmington on Saturday. And looking back at the SEC results from earlier in the week, there hasn't been a whole lot of action so far this week. Georgia beat Montana 63-50 on Tuesday. Mississippi State beat Jackson State 82-59. Going back to Sunday, Florida picked up another win over Stetson 86-40. Missouri beat Wichita State 72-62. Texas A&M over UT Rio Grande 81-68. LSU beat Louisiana Tech 86-55. Kentucky fell to Georgia Tech 79-62. Kentucky has lost three straight games. It has lost to two unranked non-conference opponents. That has only happened twice before in Kentucky Wildcats history, where it has lost to two unranked non-conference opponents in the same season. So Kentucky going back to that loss against Richmond back in November, and then of course the losses to Kansas and now Virginia Tech. It is a mind-numbing start for the Wildcats, and I think they'll get it turned around eventually. They've got a game coming up against Notre Dame on Saturday, and then the big game on December 19th against UCLA before taking on Louisville in the rivalry game on the 26th. So Kentucky still has a handful of more power conference, non-conference games to play before getting to SEC competition. But Kentucky's got to figure it out in a hurry. You don't have the same number of non-conference games to really get all of this worked out. And so if you get off to a slow start in SEC play, if teams are ahead of you, it can be tough to catch up early. So for Kentucky, outside shooting problems, turnover problems, need to be better defensively. Did not look good against Georgia Tech on defense. And I think for John Calipari, he understands that his team is young, that it needs to get better, but it's not getting a whole lot outside of Terrence Clark and Brandon Boston Jr. on offense. And that's not what you want out of a Coach Calipari team. He's got a lot of talent. Olivier Saar not contributing enough offensively. I think for Kentucky, there has to be some change quickly, and somebody else needs to step up, because right now Kentucky's offense is having to stick to the inside. They did shoot 40% from three against Georgia Tech, but they're not dominating the glass as much as you would see. They're having slightly better ball movement, but they're not slowing teams down on defense. And for Kentucky, it's just another non-conference portion of a season where there's a bit of a slow stretch. And sure, they might be able to compete for the SEC, but that's just not a team that you take seriously on a national stage once you get to March. And that is something that Kentucky has been lacking for a couple of years now. So we'll see if that changes as Tennessee is looking to be the favorite in the SEC. Kentucky was supposed to be the number two. Right now, Kentucky doesn't look like the second-best team in the SEC. I still think it's one of the most talented teams in the SEC and should still be in the running by the time we get to February. Joe Lunardi updated his bracketology on Tuesday. So looking at it now, Tennessee is back up to a number four seed. Kentucky has dropped to a number nine seed. There are seven SEC teams in the field. Number one seeds right now, Villanova, Michigan State moving up to that spot, Gonzaga, and Baylor. So not too many surprises there. But Tennessee now the highest seeded SEC team, with LSU being an eight seed. You have Alabama as a nine seed. I mentioned Kentucky as a nine seed. Florida has moved up to a five seed. Missouri is now in at an 11 seed. Missouri has now had two quality wins in the last week and a half, beating Oregon last weekend. They beat Wichita State. So I think for Konzo Martin and his team, off to a really nice start. We'll see if they can keep that rolling. They have a game against Liberty on Wednesday that could be somewhat intriguing. I think there's a potential for an upset there. We'll see what Liberty can do. Remember, they were a really solid team a year ago. So Joe Lunardi has Tennessee as a four seed right now, but he's got Tennessee winning the automatic bid. So he has Tennessee as his SEC champion as of right now and the highest seeded SEC team in his midseason bracketology. I appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, Tennessee facing Cincinnati on Saturday at 12:30. You can catch that game right here on the Sports Animal. We'll have all of the Vol Network coverage for you with tip-off beginning at 12:30. Pre-game coverage will start at 12 noon right here on the Sports Animal. So and obviously be paying attention to how it's all going to be structured between 99.1 FM, 990 AM, as we've got coverage for Tennessee and Vanderbilt this Saturday as well. But I appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star rating and review, and tell a college basketball fan you know about the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time right here on the Sports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on the Sports Animal.